27. The fall feast took place the third week in October. It was an elegant affair held in the massive clubhouse of Big Elk Estates, a top choice for weddings and anniversaries, situated in the heart of the neighborhood that surrounded the private school. Asha had long ago signed up to help plan the fall feast, and Brooke had been guilted into it by Tina, the Falcon mom who owned the stable where she kept her horses. Gift baskets had already been prepared for coaches and teachers, but each year they got something special for Mr. Dilly. The committee had decided to meet at the Tuscan Grill for happy hour to discuss the headmaster's fall feast goodie basket, as the event was just 2 weeks away. Tina had taken the liberty of ordering the antipasto platter and Italian lemonades for the table. Brooke would have preferred wine. "And something I just thought of," Tina said, rubbing a baguette around in a dish of olive tapenade, "is the new dog salon, Collar and Comb. We should definitely get him a gift certificate for that place. He loves to spoil his corgis."
"Which gives me a good idea," Ethan Hayes said. "How about we pair that with an afternoon at Scotch and Scissors? That's hilarious, right? Daddy and doggies both get groomed. We could call it a pamper package."
"Sounds like a basket of diapers," Brooke said. Ethan laughed uproariously.
"It does,"
Asha said. "I like it. It's unique. I think that's a definite yes."
"I'll get some gift cards and a bottle of Macallan," Brooke said.
"That was easy."
Suddenly consulting her phone, she said, "And on that note, I'm out. Sloan's texting me. I have to go." Tina pursed her lips and said, "Aw, poor thing. How is she?"
"Excuse me?"
Brooke said, placing her wallet on the table. Ethan looked like he was about to choke on his bite of bread and glanced in horror over at Tina, who appeared to be startled by her own words.
"Well," she sputtered, "I mean, I just..."
"You just what?" Brooke demanded.
"What does that mean, poor thing?"
"Only that Candace said that Linda said that Reed had invited Heather to go with him to the Silverman's Halloween party, and that it's always hard for young people when they split up. I remember having my heart broken by..."
"Nobody broke Sloane's heart."
Asha began to fan herself with her cocktail napkin.
"Of course not," Tina said. "That's not what I meant."
"You said it, and you called my daughter a poor thing. Nobody broke up with Sloane. I told her she couldn't see Reed Leland anymore, and if his mom is telling anyone anything different, she's a big fucking liar."
Asha raised her hand to wave at the server and called pleasantly, "Check, please."
Finally managing to swallow, Ethan said,
"You have every right to feel that way. After what happened, if it was my daughter, I would have done the exact same thing."
"After what happened, huh? Great," Brooke said.
"So you know about that too? Fantastic."
Brooke stood and headed for the door. Out on the sidewalk, she turned toward Sakura Sushi, where she planned to down two glasses of wine at the bar. Behind her, Asha was calling her name. Brooke spun around and said,
"Did I forget something?"
"No, no," Asha said, embarrassed to find herself short of breath. She was wearing tennis shoes, her only shoes that didn't hurt her feet, and a flowery maternity dress. As she speed-walked after Brooke, she held her stomach with one hand. She felt ridiculous.
"I'm sorry," she said, finally catching up. "I know you said you have somewhere to be, but..."
"I lied. I don't have anywhere to be," Brooke said. "I just didn't want to be there any longer."
"Right," Asha said nervously. "Listen, I totally understand. I know things between us have been a little bit tense."
"A little," Brooke said, and Asha couldn't tell if she was being sarcastic or not.
"I was just wondering if sometime, preferably soon, if you and I could get together for coffee and talk."
"Asha, I'm not sure it's a good idea for us to sit down and discuss the whole UCLA thing. Honestly, I just feel that
Mia doesn't want to go to UCLA anymore. That was just a temporary lark, I suppose. She's all over the place. I can't keep up. She's on to the next idea, and she's literally doing her very last private training session with Mr. McGuire at the school as we speak. She wants to quit then."
Brooke cocked her head to one side, interested.
"Well then, what about now? I was just heading down to Sakura to sit at the bar for a little bit."
Asha checked her phone.
"I don't have any messages from work. Are you sure?"
"Absolutely," Brooke said, continuing to walk. "How's your work going?
I see a lot of for sale signs around Big Elk. Are people coming as well as going?
It's been a little slow, Asha answered. They reached the big red double doors of Sakura, and Brooke held one open for Asha, who went on to say,
I'm looking forward to taking a break for a while. I've just got a single house left, and I only took that one on because the seller is the doctor delivering my baby.
Can't say no to him, Brooke commented.
Her, Asha answered. But yes, you're very right. I would never say no to her. She needs to get out of that house. She and her husband have some very sad memories there.
That's a shame, Brooke responded, not really listening. On second thought, let's get a table. You wouldn't be comfortable at the bar, would you?
No, not really. Thank you. That's very thoughtful.
After they'd been seated, Asha ordered a miso soup, and Brooke requested the wine list. Brooke laced her fingers together and leaned forward.
So, what do you want to talk about?
My husband and the weird way the two of you act like you know each other better than you should.
She couldn't say that, and the truth was, she suspected that she was imagining things. What she really needed to talk about was the girls.
Asha unrolled her black cloth napkin and began folding it into triangles.
I've been really worried about Mia. She's been moody and distant lately, and I just don't know what to do.
Sloane's moody and distant, too. That kind of goes along with the age, don't you think?
She's just so sad. And now Mr. McGuire has told me that he thinks Mia is involved with the wrong crowd. Partying, drinking, all the bad stuff.
Brooke glanced to their right.
Excuse me, she called to the server. Forget the wine list, if you don't mind. Could you please just bring me a nice Chardonnay?
I think Mia's getting into trouble, Asha said.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Do you think Sloane is doing the same? Asha asked. From what I understand, Mia and Sloane have been hanging out with someone who's a bad influence.
The server arrived with Brooke's glass of Chardonnay. She took a large swallow, then said,
Reed Leland, I suppose he's the bad influence you're talking about?
Yes, I heard he's dangerous, even.
Asha, Brooke said, running a hand through her hair. Okay, yes, Sloane has been getting into trouble with Reed Leland. That's what Ethan was talking about just now back there at our meeting, the horrible thing that happened.
What was it?
Sloane took some sexy selfies and texted them to Reed, and they got leaked. And at this point, I think pretty much everyone knows.
Asha sighed sympathetically.
I didn't know.
Well, you're not the big school gossip, are you? Thank God. You don't stick your nose in other people's business constantly. We need to work together to figure out how to get Reed out of our lives and away from our daughters. We need to make sure Mia and Sloane are safe. We might have to make some big changes, but we can handle it. We have to.
Asha exhaled loudly and looked relieved.
Knowing you're in this with me makes me feel so much more hopeful.
Impulsively, Asha got up and went around the side of the table to give Brooke a hug. Her belly got in the way, sending the Chardonnay over on its side, soaking the table and then running directly for Brooke's lap.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Asha said. I'm like a clumsy elephant. God, Brooke, I'm so sorry.
Instead of standing up, Brooke pulled Asha in closer and patted her back while she allowed the wine to soak into her Escada blonde suede pants. She couldn't believe how good it felt after being snubbed by so many women after the fallout of her flirtations during her marriage to have an ally again. At the same time, she was thinking of Phil and how handsome and forlorn he looked as she walked up to him at the Ocean Prime Raw Bar in Denver, halfway through his bottle of Muscadet, hunched over the last few in a tray of Shoal Bay Olympia oysters.
It's fine, Asha, Brooke said. It's totally fine. I swear, I'm the one who's sorry.
An hour later, just down the street from her house, Asha pulled to a stop next to Mr. McGuire's pickup truck, where he was parked at the side of the road.
Hello, you,
she shouted while waving, after rolling down her window. Nick rolled his own window down and looked up. He appeared to be unhappy.
Mrs. Wilson, he said, in a tone that indicated he wasn't inviting a casual conversation.
I take it you just dropped Mia off?
Yes.
How was the last private? Was she receptive to your advice?
It was fine.
What's wrong? Asha asked. You seem upset.
When I dropped her off just now, your husband was home.
What? He was? Shit.
Nick nodded.
I'm sorry. I realize that the two of you weren't in agreement about this final session.
I've got to go, Asha answered, already driving away.
Phil was drinking a glass of water in the kitchen when she burst through the garage door into the house.
What are you doing home? She asked.
He tossed the glass into the sink and said,
What was she doing with him after we agreed it was over?
What are you doing home? She repeated.
I forgot some things I needed.
Like what? Asha shouted incredulously. Like what did you forget that you don't have backed up on your computer or phone? You're supposed to be in Phoenix right now. Phoenix, she repeated. Did I miss something? Phoenix?
Yeah, he answered, angrily approaching her. Except I'm not in Phoenix. I'm here because I forgot my...
The area between his eyebrows creased.
Forgot what?
My wallet.
Asha stared him down and then leaned in to fish his wallet out of his back pocket. She held it up and then tossed it on the bar.
Liar. Not even a good liar. A stupid liar.
Fine, he said. I missed my flight because I fell asleep, if you want to know the truth. But you lied too. You said she was done with the privates, and then he shows up here to drop her off after 2 hours of brainwashing.
He wasn't brainwashing her, please.
No, just injecting her with witch doctor potion cures and telling her that we're bad parents who don't know what's best for her.
Why aren't you in Phoenix? Have you ever even been in Phoenix this past year? What in the hell is going on?
You tell me what the hell is going on. When he dropped her off just now, she was so exhausted and out of it, she could barely walk. Is that what you want for our daughter? Honestly, Asha, I'm so...
Oliver, trombone in hand, appeared at the bottom of the stairs and said,
I heard shouting. Is everything okay?
Yeah, honey, yeah, Asha responded, putting her arm around Phil's waist. Everything is...
Great,
Phil gave his son a thumbs up.
Everything is awesome.
Feeling worried, wronged, and sickened by all the drama, Asha pulled her arm away from Phil's waist and walked off. She left the kitchen, hauled herself up the stairs, and knocked lightly on Mia's door. There was no answer. She cracked the door open. It was dark. The blinds had been drawn, and Mia was in bed under the covers.
Mia?
Asha called softly.
Mia?
Yeah, Mom?
Are you feeling all right?
Not the best.
What can I do? Can I get you anything?
Maybe later. I'm just sore and tired. I'm gonna sleep it off.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm fine,
she mumbled, turning to face the wall and pulling a big pillow over to hide her face.
Okay?
Okay, honey, okay.
Asha closed the door, feeling a sense of impending dread and confusion. Mia needed help. Things were not fine. Something was very, very wrong. 28. The air had a wintry bite, even though it was only late October, the cusp of autumn. An early mountain snow was on its way. The night was clear, though, cloudless and starry, beautiful, crisp, sweet, scented with pine. A perfect night for the fall feast. As the cars showed up in the turnaround in front of the Big Elk Estates clubhouse to be valeted to spots around the neighborhood, some of the men didn't bother with anything warmer than their suit coats. It was a formal affair, not black tie, because some of the employees wouldn't have been able to attend, but many people looked like they were showing up for the Academy Awards. Families walked in small herds, little girls in lace and tiny heels, boys scratching at their special occasion starched collars, moms with sparkly earrings, dads with belts that were pulled a notch too tight. The entrance to the clubhouse was lined with tables and parents. Asha was seated next to a sign that said, three-course dinner for 12 at Fromaggio's, including 2 rounds of top-shelf cocktails. She saw Natalie walk in and stood up.
Natalie, hi. You look so nice.
Thanks, Asha, Natalie said. I got cleaned up.
She'd been feeling better after her trip to the nurse's prescription cabinet and had tried to look her best.
You look nice, too.
Natalie, don't even.
Asha ran a hand over her volcanic mountain of a body, which she'd covered in a parrot-themed kimono.
I'm ready, and it's not even time. I can't walk properly. My ankles are so swollen, and I've got the varicose veins and everything.
It's going to be so worth it, just a little longer.
It is, you're right. So, Asha pointed down the hallway, this is all a blind auction. You write down a bid on a piece of paper, and if you win, you get the prize. I didn't have anything to offer myself. I mean, who wants a free house staging tutorial?
Me, Natalie said. She was serious.
I'll give you one whenever you want. But no one thought that was going to be popular, so I'm sitting at the Fromaggio's table. Are you interested in bidding on a 3-course dinner for 12 at a fancy restaurant?
When Natalie made a face, Asha cupped a hand to the side of her mouth and said,
Me neither. I don't know more than a few people I want to have dinner with, do you? But we've had a lot of offers. If you walk on down, it gets crazier and crazier. Lift passes, Jeep excursions, a week at Club Med in Greece, golf and tennis lessons, cool sculpting and personal training. There's so much. Go check it out.
While they were talking, Brooke and Sloane walked in, looking impossibly similar and glamorous in short black cocktail dresses. Brooke's had a lacy top layer while Sloane's was flashy and sequined. Both wore over-the-knee black boots that invited the question of whether either of them might also have a cat-o'-nine-tails whip in their matching leather purses. They turned directly into the dining room and didn't see Asha and Natalie. As she watched the staggeringly beautiful Brooke walk away, every nuance of her perfect hips on display in the clingy dress, Natalie felt a surge of fury.
Is Phil here? She asked quietly.
No, he wanted to be, but he had a work trip that he had to reschedule because of a missed flight.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Why do you ask?
Asha said, looking slightly alarmed.
I called my friend, my ex who still works at Le Meridian. I know you didn't ask me to, but I did.
Asha froze in the middle of organizing her table.
And?
Phil stayed there. He had dinner in his room. Dinner for two with wine. Last March. He's stayed there since. 3 times. More of the same. Room service and wine.
That's just... Asha winced and clutched her stomach. Impossible. I was worried, but I didn't really think.
I'm sorry.
Asha felt like her whole life was slipping away.
There could be a mistake. Phil Wilson is a very common name.
A few nights ago, Asha, I drove by Brooke Elliman's apartment building.
You mean her house up on the hill?
No, an apartment complex. The new one called Coy Creek. She either leased a unit or bought it for her husband when he left. I drove by it because I thought maybe she had something going on with the man I'd been seeing for a while, and I just wanted to know.
And?
It was 1 in the morning. My ex's car wasn't there, but Phil's was.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Asha looked ready to collapse.
How could he? I didn't think he would. And her. She and I just had a heart-to-heart the other day. I was mad at myself for suspecting them of doing that to me. I thought I was wrong and paranoid and crazy. I thought we were good. Jesus, I've got to go home. I don't want to ruin Mia's party. Can you drive her home when it's over?
I took an Uber, but I can certainly bring her home in one. Is Oliver here?
He's at a sleepover, thank God. Please, just let Mia know I was tired. She's used to it. She'll understand.
Asha grabbed her purse from underneath the table.
Should you be driving? Natalie asked.
Heartache doesn't stop me from driving. I can cry while I drive.
Asha threw her purse strap over her shoulder and headed for the door. Escaping her boring table for the clubhouse bathroom, Brooke sat on the toilet and scrolled through Twitter. After a second, she wrinkled her nose. It was a fancy facility with wooden walls. Brooke knocked.
Hello? Whoever you are, I can smell you smoking. The smoke alarm will go off and you'll be busted and embarrassed and in a load of trouble. Put it out, please.
From the next stall, Linda said.
Brooke?
Linda? It was quiet except for the sound of 2 toilets flushing, and then they exited simultaneously. Aside from them, the bathroom was empty. Brooke glared at Linda, who went straight to the sinks to wash her hands.
You carry a gun and you smoke?
Brooke asked, wearing an expression that was a mixture of amusement and contempt.
I'm complex,
Linda answered, holding her hands out towards the paper towel dispenser and waiting.
I don't appreciate your sarcasm. Brooke, Linda said, your voice is hurting my ears.
How dare you? How dare you speak to me that way? How dare your son treat my daughter the way he has? And how dare you tell people that he broke up with her? I'm absolutely sick to death.
Oh my God, be quiet, please.
Brooke inhaled and said, I will not.
Fine then,
Linda said, drawing her hands and crumpling the towel up into a little ball.
Don't be quiet. Mouth off to everyone here about how unfair life is for you and your daughter. Find someone to argue with and belittle and threaten. Enjoy yourself. I know that's what you like to do. Everyone here hates you to death, so it should be easy for you to go start a fight with literally anybody else. Not me. Not tonight. I don't go out all that often, and I came to have fun.
Linda left the bathroom, and the heavy door swung shut behind her. Brooke stood there motionless for a second, replaying the conversation in her head. She gave the middle finger to the closed door and said, bitch, 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 before turning towards the mirror and fishing around in her purse for her lipstick. Natalie walked around miserably looking for Mia, but with no success. At 7:30, Mr. Dilly stood at the front of the ballroom and used a spoon to ding, ding, ding against his scotch glass. There was a small stage, a podium, and a microphone.
If you could all make your way to the tables, that would be excellent. Thank you.
The 118 upperclassmen were seated together at tables of 12 in the back. The families and faculty were at the front. Natalie, Yvonne, and Rex had been seated with Harry Doyle, the boss of the custodial crew, the three lunch ladies, two volunteer crossing guards, and the groundskeepers. No one at Natalie's table was paying attention to the speakers on the stage. They were engrossed in their platters of sirloin steak with mushroom duxelle cream sauce. Instead of eating, Natalie was staring across the room at Nick, who looked very handsome in his suit and whimsical tie. A vineyard vines with a soccer ball pattern against a light blue background, the exact color of his eyes. Natalie hated that tie because he'd told her once that it had been a gift from Millie. Doggedly, Natalie followed his every move throughout the dinner. Linda Leland didn't show up to many school events, but when she did, was a dead ringer for Gwyneth Paltrow dressed in a Stevie Nicks costume of scarves, tunic, and beret. She came up behind Nick's chair and put both of her hands on his shoulders. Leaning down so that her hair made a curtain around his head, she appeared to whisper something in his ear. Natalie couldn't help herself. She shot up out of her seat.
Where are you going?
Yvonne asked through a mouthful of roasted rosemary potato.
To the bar.
Grab me a vodka tonic, will you? Thanks, girl.
Natalie asked for two.
Make them doubles, she said.
While she waited, Brooke Elliman appeared beside her. It was all Natalie could do not to audibly groan.
Good evening, Miss Bellaman, Brooke said, turning her back to the bar and leaning against it, elbows on top.
Hello, Mrs. Elliman, Natalie said, willing the barman to move more quickly.
I've been wanting to have a word with you, Brooke said. I'm happy that we've run into each other.
Are you really? I guess you enjoyed our last conversation more than I did. Brooke leaned her head back and laughed.
Touché.
Natalie couldn't take much more, knowing that Brooke was sleeping with Asha's husband. Why can't you just behave like a normal middle-aged woman? Leave people in relationships alone. Join that site eHarmony or Our Time and date some nice single old men. This grabbed Brooke's attention, and she gave Natalie the evil side eye for a second before saying,
people don't usually speak to me like that.
And now you're going to have me fired, right?
No, what you said was bitchy, but I've said a lot of bitchy things myself, to you and to a lot of other people. I am middle-aged, and if I'm going to make a change, now's the time. And right now, for starters, I feel like apologizing to you more than I feel like getting you fired.
Thank you for the apology. Natalie picked up her drinks. But I'm not the one you should be apologizing to.
What do you mean?
Brooke asked, finally standing up straight.
I've got to go, Natalie said, walking away.
This time, Brooke didn't follow. On the way back to her table with the drinks, Natalie stopped to ask one of Mia's friends, Jeremiah Solomon, if he knew where she was.
Bathroom,
he answered. Natalie dropped Yvonne's drink off, saying,
Be right back.
Where are you off to now?
Yvonne asked.
Sit down and hang out.
In a sec, Natalie said.
Just then, Nick was called up to the stage. He joyfully jogged through the sea of parents and students to the sound of applause, waving to everyone and treating them to his devastating, ear-to-ear boyish smile. Natalie downed her drink in several swallows and plunked it on the table.
Damn, girl,
Yvonne said.
Slow and steady wins the race. Take it easy.
I'm fine, Natalie answered, wiping her mouth with her sleeve.
In the clubhouse, there were four meeting rooms, a kitchen, a men's bathroom, a women's bathroom, and a family bathroom. Natalie checked the women's bathroom first and didn't find Mia. She walked down to the family bathroom, tried the handle, and it was locked. Inside, several people were arguing. She heard Sloane's voice. The girl loudly said,
Reed, stop!
Someone else was crying, loud, messy gasps between brief periods of silence and then more sobbing. Natalie banged on the door.
Hey, hey, open up!
She stopped and stood back, waiting. Everything went quiet.
Open up,
Natalie said, again knocking. I'm not leaving. The door flung open so suddenly that Natalie jumped. Her clutched purse, which she'd been carrying underneath her armpit, dropped to the floor. The clasp sprang open, and the contents scattered. Natalie was face to face with Reed.
I'm sorry,
he said politely, wearing an expression of profound concern.
I didn't realize it was you, Miss Bellman. Is something wrong?
Who's in there with you?
He opened the door wider until Natalie could see both girls in the corner by the toilet. Sloane had one arm wrapped protectively around Mia's shoulder.
It's just Mia and Sloane, he answered. We were having a private conversation. What can we do for you?
Natalie gave Reed a long up and down inspection and then looked back at the girls.
I want them to come with me, please.
Come on,
Sloane said to Mia. The girls walked out submissively, their heads bowed and their arms hanging by their sides. But Natalie detected an undercurrent of tension. Reed remained inside, one hip against the sink.
Let me help you, Miss Bellman.
He crouched down, picked up Natalie's clutch purse, and started collecting the scattered items. A lipstick from under the toilet, a hairband that had landed in a dirty corner, and which she knew she would never use again. After tucking her things inside the purse, he handed it back to her as if he were the world's most chivalrous gentleman. Natalie didn't thank him. She just grabbed it out of his hand. To the girls, Natalie said,
Is there anything you want to tell me? I might be able to help.
Sloane shrugged and said,
Like what?
Mia shook her head.
Fine then, Natalie said. Sloane, maybe you should go find your mom.
Okay,
she said, walking away without a word to either Reed or Mia. After a second, Reed followed.
I'll go find mine too,
Mia said, looking this way and that, as if wondering where she might be able to hide.
Your mom had to go home and said to tell you she suddenly got very tired.
Fine, I'll get a ride. No big deal.
Your mom asked me to take you.
Really? And we have to do that? I mean, I'm fine. You don't need to.
I think I better do what your mom asked me to. Just come find me when the party's over. I'll be waiting.
You know, I really don't want to stay,
Mia said, eyes on the floor.
There's going to be music afterwards, and your mom was hoping.
They play terrible music, Miss Bellman. It sucks. Can we just go?
But
please?
Of course, Natalie said, opening her purse and looking for her phone. I'll just order us an Uber.
Damn. What?
My phone isn't in here. It must have fallen out when I dropped my purse.
It will be on the floor in the bathroom,
Mia said.
Let's look.
They went back inside, but it wasn't there. Mia pulled out her own phone.
I'll ring it,
she said.
What's your number?
Mia dialed it, and they waited. There was no sound whatsoever.
I suppose there's a chance I left it at my table, Natalie said.
They weaved back through the dining room while Nick continued to pace the stage, spouting compliments to the students, parents, and faculty. As they passed his table, Natalie saw his phone was next to his plate, mostly covered by a white cloth napkin. Nick had been seated at the rear of the table, and everyone had angled their chairs to face the stage. They were all raptly listening to him as he strode back and forth, waving his muscular arms around in the air, espousing confidence in the greatness of the year to come. The temptation was there, right there, easy, calling her name. She decided she didn't care. Natalie leaned over and fished the phone out from underneath the napkin. It would only require a second to look and see who he'd been texting and calling while he was taking his endless break from spending time with her.
What are you doing?
Mia asked, giving Natalie an odd look.
I'm not sure that's a good.
It's fine. Coach Nick won't mind if I use his phone to call us an Uber. There was a sudden lull in the presentation. Nick had stopped speaking mid-sentence, and Natalie looked up, the phone in her hand. She nearly dropped it. He was staring right at her from the stage with shocked indignation. Without hesitation, she typed in his passcode, the school's address, 2258. Suddenly, the phone was wrenched out of her hand. Lars Jaeger, who was usually the friendliest man on earth, said in his loud and accented voice,
"What do you think you're doing? That's Nick's phone."
There was the clattering sound of forks being lowered to plates and heavy glass goblets thunking down onto cloth-covered tables. Then a hush fell over the room. All eyes were on Natalie and Lars, including Nick's.
"Oh, I know it is," Natalie said, followed by a quick nervous laugh. "I just need to call an Uber to take Mia Wilson home. Her mom had to leave sick. It's a bit of an emergency, and I don't have my phone on me, so I thought I'd borrow Mr. McGuire's."
Lars looked at Natalie while rubbing his long, cleft chin. His bushy white brows knitted for a second, and then he appeared to relax.
"Of course, I see. I'll order you one."
After a few taps on his own phone, he said,
"There's one just around the corner."
Up on the stage, Nick had apparently decided he was done talking and was having some trouble replacing the microphone on the stand. His hands were shaking. Natalie was suddenly terrified.
"Let's go, Mia. Thank you, Mr. Jaeger."
"No problem, Miss Bellman."
Natalie actually pulled on Mia's arm to make her move faster, out into the hall and towards the front doors.
"I had a coat,"
Mia said, trotting alongside Natalie, but looking back towards the dining room.
"It's okay," Natalie answered. "They'll have it for you at the school on Monday. Come on, come on."
When they burst out into the cold evening and saw headlights coming down the road, Natalie took a deep breath, thinking, "I beat him. We're out." She was wrong.
"What was that about in there, Miss Bellman?"
Nick asked, appearing on the sidewalk. Natalie wondered if he actually leaped off the stage and sprinted after them.
"What were you doing with my phone?"
That moment of fury she'd seen up on the stage had been replaced by a paternal expression of concern and confusion.
"I needed to call a car to take us home."
"It appears you knew my passcode."
Natalie didn't respond.
"Why didn't you use your own phone?"
Nick asked.
"I can't find it. I lost it. I dropped my purse."
"Okay," he said. "That's what's going on then. I see."
"Nothing's going on," Natalie answered, "except that Mia's mom was sick and had to go home, and she didn't want to make Mia leave the party early, so she asked me to bring her home."
"The party's not over for another few hours."
"I know," Natalie said, "but some of the kids had an argument and—
"I wanted to go," Mia interrupted. "I asked Miss Bellman to take me now."
"Where's your coat, Mia?"
Nick asked.
"You must be freezing."
"I left it at my table."
Nick immediately removed his sports jacket and draped it around Mia's shoulders.
"Right. Well, listen, Mia, I can't let you leave with Miss Bellman. That would be a big failure on my part."
"I'm fine," Natalie said.
"You're not fine," Nick answered, exasperated. "Anyone can see you're not fine."
"I wasn't going to drive," Natalie said, just as the Uber pulled up next to them at the curb.
Nick stepped forward and opened the back door.
"Natalie,"
he said softly,
"please just go."
"But—
I'll make sure Mia gets home safely. I take her home from her privates occasionally, don't I, Mia?"
"Yes."
"Her parents are fine with it."
"Mia, is that okay?" Natalie asked, dubious.
"Sure,"
Mia answered with a one-shouldered shrug. She seemed utterly unconcerned with which one of the school employees was going to chauffeur her back to her house.
"You should leave now, Natalie," Nick said. "I'll call you on your home phone later to check and make sure you made it safe."
Feeling exhausted and embarrassed, Natalie did as he asked. She got into the Uber and went back to her apartment. After pouring herself a big glass of water and taking her landline receiver over to the bed with her, she lay down fully clothed and stared at the ceiling. Even though she didn't really believe him, there was still a smidgen of hope. Unable to sleep, she waited for hours. Eventually, she took 2 Vicodins and drifted off. When Nick did finally call, early in the morning, his message went to voicemail. Police video excerpt, Falcon Academy conference room interview, Bellman, Natalie Marie, continued. Can I get up and walk around a little bit? Natalie asks. I don't see why not, Detective Larson answers. The camera shakes for a second while Detective Larson removes it from the tripod, and then it follows Natalie as she stretches and circles the conference table. Detective Bradley has picked up her planner and is reading in the corner of the room. It's unusual for October, Natalie says, gesturing out the window. So much snow this early. Detective Larson's voice from behind the camera says, Crazy, isn't it?
Natalie,
Detective Bradley says, and Detective Larson turns the camera on him. He points to the planner.
You seem to have been pretty convinced that Mr. McGuire was carrying on some sort of torrid love affair behind your back while you were dating. What made you so sure?
It was just a feeling I had, Natalie answers. A feeling that he was one way with me and a different way with others. At first, I thought he was just a private person, and I tried to be understanding about that. Eventually, though, I started to think that he was hiding something from me.
Did you ever figure it out? Detective Bradley asks. If he had a secret or not?
Natalie hesitates, then says, No. 29. After Natalie had been driven away from the Big Elk Estates clubhouse, Nick shook his head and said with a laugh,
Well, that was awkward.
Mia gave him a half smile and redid her ponytail.
It's no big deal.
I'm sorry you had to see that. Miss Bellman is a very nice woman, and she's good at her job, but you know, sometimes people overindulge. She used some pretty poor judgment tonight.
Yeah, Mia said. I understand.
Okay,
he said, giving her a light tap on the top of her head.
Come on, kiddo, let's go.
Nick led Mia across the parking lot towards his truck. He looked back at the clubhouse before opening the passenger side door for her. The lights from the front door spilled out onto the sidewalk, warm and inviting. All the guests were gathered closely inside, enjoying the tail end of the meal, looking forward to dessert, more rousing speeches about the fantastic future of all the students, and after that, disco favorites played by a popular local cover band. There wasn't even an errant smoker standing outside. Once they were seated in the truck, Nick put the heat on full blast. They drove out of the parking lot and turned right up the main road, which led towards the Wilson's neighborhood. For the first minute, they rode in silence, but Nick kept glancing over at Mia. Finally, he said,
Miss Bellman said some kids had an argument.
Just the same old, she said placidly, staring out the window. Not worth mentioning.
You don't want to tell me?
It was about soccer.
I don't believe you.
Nick took a left turn up Canyon Drive. Mia frowned, but didn't say anything. He wasn't taking the most direct route to her house.
Did it have anything to do with what you and Sloan and some of the boys were planning to do later on tonight?
Mia's head spun around, and she looked directly at him, evaluating. Nick made another turn, this time onto a side street lined with enormous houses, all with big, shiny, floor-to-ceiling windows, and flanked by lodgepole pines, red boulders, and rows of sculpted bushes.
You took a wrong turn, Mia informed him.
I know where I'm going.
She stared at him. There was a long and uncomfortable silence.
What was the argument about?
He asked, the wheel sliding through his hands as he turned yet again. She crossed her arms across her chest, defiant and silent, even though she was being driven to an unknown destination.
I think,
he said, his eyes fixed outside at the night.
That it was about you not wanting to let your friends party in the empty houses your mom is selling anymore. I think in the past couple of months, you've gotten a conscience about the crimes you've committed.
Crimes? She echoed, unimpressed. Whatever. I'm not sure what you're talking about, and you're totally going the wrong way.
No, I'm not.
As they ascended the mountain, the houses had larger plots, with great dark patches of well-tended lawns stretching for acres in between. They reached a driveway bordered on either side by stone towers. Nick turned in, and Mia's demeanor changed abruptly.
Tell me what's going on. Why are we here?
Mia demanded, her veneer of insolence crumbling. She was looking around, panicked. They reached the top of the driveway, where there was a large parking area outside the four-car garage of a sprawling Spanish-style villa.
I'm doing an intervention, he said.
What's that supposed to mean?
There was a weeping willow drooping over the drive, casting a large shadow on the pavement, which was partially illuminated by landscaping lights. Nick parked underneath the willow, turned off the ignition, and said,
You were supposed to meet up with your friends here tonight at 1 a.m. You were going to let them in using the key codes your mom keeps in a notebook that she carries in her purse. You were going to drink and smoke pot and who knows what else.
As pretty and innocent as Mia often managed to appear, she had a savage side. She seethed with irritation that she'd been caught.
No, she said. What makes you think that?
It doesn't matter.
Nick sighed and tapped his hand against the dash a couple of times.
What does matter is that, in my estimation, you're about 6 months away from ruining your life, being arrested for trespassing in one of your mom's houses, jumping in a car with a drunk teenage boy who takes a mountain turn too fast, and you end up dying at the side of the road or at the bottom of some ravine.
Mia blew some air out of her mouth in a way that conveyed disdain.
You think I'm full of it?
I think you're overreacting. No one's died.
Really? Nick asked. Want to bet? Let's go in the house. You'll see.
Take me home, please, Mia said, primly folding her hands in her lap. I don't like this. I've had enough.
I don't like this either, Nick said. I don't like having to teach you a lesson. You're one of my favorite students, but let's get real. I could turn you into the police myself if I wanted to.
She closed her big brown eyes, and her chin dropped to her chest. It wasn't clear if he had actually gotten through to her or if she was playing a part.
I'm sorry. Please don't tell anyone. Please don't tell my mom.
Mia, I'm trying to keep you out of trouble. That's why I'm doing this.
I said I'm sorry. What more do you want?
I want you to take me inside.
What? No, I can't do that.
Sure you can. You have the code. You've been inside this house before with your friends. I know you have. I know all the stuff you've done.
Mia's face was scrunched up now and scared, a little bit sick.
Why do you want to go in there?
So I can show you the bedroom of the girl who was your age, who reminded me of you, who died 2 years ago because she started to do the same stupid stuff you're doing.
Mia didn't respond right away. In fact, her expression contained a hint of morbid curiosity.
Are you serious?
Deadly serious. All you have to do is unlock the house and come inside with me, and then you'll understand. I'll show you.
A minute later, Mia opened the front door to Elena and Luis Ruiz's house and allowed Nick to enter.
Don't turn on the overhead.
I won't,
he answered, pulling out his phone and turning on the flashlight.
Which one's her bedroom?
Mia asked.
I'll know it when I find it,
he answered, heading for the stairs.
What was her name?
Mia asked, following him.
Jill.
I've heard about her. She used to hang out with Reed.
True, Nick said, briefly.
If she died 2 years ago,
Mia said, a step behind him on the stairs,
they probably cleaned out her room.
They didn't, he answered. It was too hard for the mom. She left it alone.
How do you know?
She told me.
Nick turned his flashlight down a long, dark hall.
I've never been up here, Mia said, sounding freaked out.
You kids like the basements, don't you? Nick answered. That's what I heard, anyway.
He shone the light into 2 open bedrooms before arriving at a third, which had a closed door.
This one. This must be it.
He reached out, turned the doorknob, and pushed. The bedroom had a large window, and the moon was 3/4 full. The light from the sky outside played over part of the 4-poster bed, a sliver of a desk, and a zebra-print chair with a hot pink blanket folded and draped over the back. He touched the blanket. His hand lingered there, and after a moment, he brought his hand to his nose and made a noise. It sounded like he was either choking or crying.
You okay?
Mia asked.
Yes,
he answered, sounding anything but okay.
I just wasn't ready for how this would feel.
Mia shifted her weight uncomfortably. Nick walked over to the desk and played his phone flashlight across it. It was the sort that had a glass top over the wood.
Look at that, he said. Some of her photos are still here.
Let me see,
Mia said, coming to stand beside him. There were a dozen or so slipped underneath the desk's glass, and more than half were of the Falcon Academy girls' soccer team. The girls wore their hair back in a variety of unique, colorful headbands. Many of them were oily-faced with acne, and a few had big smiles that revealed glinting silver tracks across their teeth. They did cartwheels in the rain, made peace signs while gathered around a table covered with cups of frozen yogurt, and posed in a pyramid on the school soccer field.
Is that her?
Mia asked, pointing to a girl who seemed to be present in all of the photos. Nick didn't answer.
Is that her?
She asked again.
Yes,
he managed in a hoarse voice.
That's her.
She was pretty.
She was.
He turned to Mia and stared at her, drinking her in for an unpleasant amount of time. Then he touched the glass over Jill's photos once more.
She was a very pretty girl.
He took a deep breath and said,
okay.
Thank God, this is creepy. Let's go.
One more minute, Nick said. I just want to make sure you understand the significance of this, of why I brought you here.
I've learned my lesson, Mia answered, aiming for sincerity but falling short.
I don't think you have, he said, taking a seat in Jill's chair.
He loosened his tie and breathed a sigh of relief as he pulled it away from his neck.
I need a show of faith. I want you to tell your mom and dad you want to start the privates again. You need my supervision. That's obvious.
Done. I'll do it. All of it, I swear. Back with the privates. No more houses, no more drinking, no more middle-of-the-night parties, okay? I didn't even like them. I wanted to stop. That was what the argument back at the clubhouse was really about.
And no more of this, either,
he said, holding out his phone.
What?
Come here.
She approached warily.
When you go to parties with boys and you pass out, dangerous, awful, irreversible things happen. I don't want you to feel ashamed of yourself like Sloane. I don't want you to die like Jill. I don't want you to get in any more trouble. I don't want this to happen to you ever again.
Mia took the phone out of his hand. Nick wore an inscrutable but intense expression as she began to scroll through a series of photos that were clearly her, but none of which she had any recollection whatsoever of taking. 30. At first, for a moment, Natalie felt a contented Sunday morning calm. It wasn't a work day, and she didn't have to get up. She'd woken without an alarm, and after peeking at her bedside clock, she'd burrowed back in for more sleep. As she cuddled into her pillow, however, her eyes popped open. Bad things had happened last night. Terrible, shameful things. Telling the truth to Asha, the cruel way she'd spoken to Mrs. Elliman, the completely irrational and rash decision to grab Nick's phone, the humiliation of hearing the words,
"Go home and go to bed, Natalie."
She jumped up and went to her kitchen counter, where her clutch purse was lying open next to a glass of water. No phone. She'd hoped against hope. Inside was only her driver's license, a debit card, a red lipstick, and hollow chapstick containing a couple of Vicodin and one Adderall. There were amends to be made. Of course she would have to apologize to Nick. She knew they would never get back together now, but it was something she needed to do for her own peace of mind. First, however, Natalie had to talk to Asha and make sure she was all right after hearing the truth about Phil. Also, Natalie wanted to make sure that Mia had gotten home all right. Asha was supposed to be having an open house. Maybe she would cancel it, but Natalie didn't think so. She walked into the kitchen, opened up her laptop, and typed in, "Open houses near me." The screen filled with results, and Natalie scanned them. Asha was having a showing at noon. Natalie wasn't sure what she needed more, a Vicodin to help her feel better about how she'd behaved the previous night, or an Adderall so she could get up, get out, and do what she needed to do. She decided on both at the same time and got into the shower. The house was situated on several acres, surrounded by a beautifully landscaped garden. It was Mediterranean in style, with a lush, weeping willow billowing over the top of the driveway, a rust-colored tiled roof, stone walls, and wrought iron accents. As Natalie walked through the foyer, she stopped at a curved table by the door. On it was a blown glass vase filled with a classic arrangement of lilies, green and white hydrangeas, and tulips. Asha must be doing all right. This was a signature touch of hers, these flowers, and she must surely have brought them from the florist that morning. She wasn't at home, grieving beneath her blankets. On the shelf below the bouquet was an ornate, carved wooden picture frame. Usually there were very few personal items left in these houses, but this glimpse into the owners' lives remained. The photo was of a beautiful dark-haired family, a smiling man with a mustache, an elegant, kind-eyed woman, and a girl with an infectious and enormous smile. It was Jill, and the woman in the photos was her mom, Elena Ruiz. This was where they had lived together before the car accident that took the teenager's life. Natalie suddenly wanted to leave, but not without having a word with Asha. After a quick search, Natalie located Asha in the master bedroom, surrounded by a small crowd of clients. She was wearing an embroidered maternity dress with an asymmetrical hem and a long matching scarf. Though Asha looked tired and not nearly as radiant as usual, Natalie was relieved to see her at work. Asha usually spoke so poetically, but today her presentation to her captive crowd sounded robotic and monotonous. She was going through the motions. Natalie wandered out of the room to wait until Asha was done. It was necessary to speak with her alone to find out for sure if she was okay. Two doors down, there was a bedroom that looked like it belonged to a teenager. Natalie knew immediately that it must have been Jill's. No one had turned it into a generic study or a workout room. Natalie hesitated before going in, feeling like an intruder, but in the end, she couldn't resist. It was colorful and cozy, a room for a modern-day princess who was very loved. Jill had been incredibly lucky once upon a time. Natalie trailed her fingers over the top of the desk, looking at photos of Jill with her friends and teammates during happier times. She sat in the black and white chair in the corner with the pink throw blanket over the arm and stared at the four-poster bed, wondering what it would have been like to grow up with such luxury. Her eyes dropped down to the floor. In the corner, beside the chair leg, was a coiled ball of silky fabric. Familiar somehow, light blue. She reached down. It was a Vineyard Vines men's necktie, and the pattern on it was tiny soccer balls. It felt as if she'd had the wind knocked out of her. She took a great big breath, as if she'd just popped up to the surface after a long underwater swim. She picked it up, stretched it taut between her hands, and imagined strangling Nick with it. As Asha was saying goodbye to a couple by the front door, Natalie came hurtling down the stairs two at a time.
"You're not going, are you?" Asha asked. "I'm almost done. I was hoping we could talk."
"I'm sorry, Asha. I actually can't stay."
"You look upset," Asha said, motioning her over to one side of the room.
"Don't be. Listen, it's for the best. Thank you for telling me. I needed to know. For my sake, and for the baby's sake, and for Oliver and Mia, too."
"Did Mia get home safe last night?"
Natalie asked, hoping Nick had at least gotten the girl home safely before coming to this house to meet Elena for some secret midnight tryst.
"She did, thank you."
"I didn't bring her. Nick, Mr. McGuire, insisted he would do it. He wouldn't take no for an answer, and Mia said it would be all right with you."
"Oh, that's okay," Asha said. "She didn't tell me, but it's fine. I was just drained and depressed. I had to lie down. She came into my room to say she was home, but that was all."
"All right, well, good," Natalie said,
realizing that she still had the tie in her hand. She scrunched it up and held it against her thigh to hide it, but it only served to make Asha look down.
"Just wanted to make sure. I really need to go."
Asha pointed to the tie.
"What have you got there?"
"Nothing."
Natalie felt as childish as she sounded. Asha looked up into Natalie's eyes and then down at the man's tie crumpled in her fist.
May I see that?
It's just a tie.
Is it from this house?
Asha asked, baffled.
I'm not stealing it, Natalie said. I know who it belongs to. I'm going to give it back.
What do you mean? That makes no sense, Natalie. Please, let me see it.
I can't. I just can't.
Natalie lunged for her shoes over by the door on the floor and ran. Asha stood by the door and watched as Natalie, barefoot, leaped over a rock and then hightailed it through the grass to reach her car.
What is wrong with you, Natalie? She said out loud.
It all seemed surreal. What was going on? It was as if some collective madness had suddenly taken over the town and erased rational behavior. She'd never really thought Phil would stray. She'd never thought Mia would become so withdrawn and furtive. She'd never thought she'd be scared to do her own job or to have another child. Many thoughts and memories and inklings started coming together. Asha had an unsettling feeling that something important was trying to make itself known. It was there. She just needed to stop and think and let it come to her. Though the house still had a few visitors, Asha walked down the stairs to the basement in-law suite, went inside the bedroom, and locked the door. Selling Elena's house was suddenly the last thing on her mind. The bed was a very tall antique, so it took some effort to get her bulging body up there, but once she made it, it was unexpectedly comfortable. Asha lay back and breathed. In, out, in, out. So, was Natalie a thief after all? Asha didn't think so. The mystery of the missing bracelet had been solved. It had never been missing at all. Or had it? Mia had been very sneaky lately, speaking on her phone in Asha's office, telling Sloane she didn't want anything to do with it. To do with what? And why had she been in there in the first place? Then Asha remembered finding Mia practically with her hand in her own purse, claiming to have been interested in the new taser gun. Was she stealing? Was she on drugs? Was it true that she was doing all of the things Mr. McGuire had accused her of, and Asha just hadn't wanted to believe it was really that bad? But maybe, she thought, it was even worse. Slowly, it started to fall into place. The pillow that was in the wrong room and smelled of marijuana, shards of broken glass in the carpet, the used condom.
Oh, God, she said out loud.
Exactly as Mr. McGuire had suspected. Phil's car outside Brooke Elliman's apartment? Not him, after all. There was a more likely explanation. Asha pictured her own bedroom, Alexa playing the soothing sound of a babbling brook all night long, the trickle of water in the humidifier, and the gentle hum of the aromatherapy diffuser. Asha would never have heard the garage door opening. Phil often used his Bose noise-canceling headphones, and they made him a very deep sleeper. Lately, he was out of town a lot, and when he was home, he spent many nights in the basement because of Asha's pregnancy snoring. It would have been easy for Mia to sneak his car out for a couple of hours. Mia. It had been Mia all along. She had been the one in the houses. What about the significance of the tie? Why would Natalie steal one of Mr. Ruiz's ties? And one like that, such a silly one with soccer balls all over it. Asha was sure the tie didn't belong to Mr. Ruiz. He was an impeccable dresser, more of an Italian silk cravat kind of guy. So if the tie had looked familiar, then where had she seen it if not in Mr. Ruiz's closet? And then she knew. She could see it plain as day. Mr. McGuire walking into the fall feast looking dapper and excited. He'd stopped by her little table, given her a peck on the cheek, and thanked her for her help with the fundraising auction. He'd been wearing the turquoise silken vineyard vines tie with the soccer ball pattern. Later that night, he'd given Mia a ride home, and for some absolutely unfathomable and possibly horrifying reason, they had stopped here and been in Elena's daughter's room. It might still be a mystery, but it was no longer a secret. Asha was about to get to the bottom of exactly what the hell had been going on behind her back. She pulled herself to her feet and waddled up the staircase into the open-plan, two-story great room. She stood in the middle, by the standalone fireplace, cupped her hands around her mouth, and yelled,
"The pregnant lady is not feeling well. I'm terribly sorry. Please be thoughtful and get your things. The open house is over. Now."
"Hi, Mom," Oliver said when Asha practically collapsed into their house, out of breath. He was sitting at the breakfast bar, eating a bowl of cereal and watching YouTube on his iPad.
"Where's your sister?"
"In her room."
"Thanks,"
Asha said, giving him a distracted pat on the arm as she passed. Asha knocked on Mia's door. No answer. Asha went ahead and entered.
"Mia? I'm taking a bath, Mom," Mia called from the bathroom. "I'll be out in 20. I need to talk to you now. Can I come in?"
There was a notably long stretch of time before Mia answered, and Asha had to remind herself that, at 8 months pregnant, it wasn't probably a good time to ram a wooden door down with her whole body.
"I guess," Mia responded eventually. "If you want to. It's not locked or anything."
Asha opened the door. Mia was hunched over, her arms around her knees. The water was still gushing out of the faucet into the tub. Her hair was wet and tangled, hanging down her back. She looked up at Asha and said,
"What's wrong, Mom?"
Asha realized she was shaking.
"I'm on to you." "Okay, what?"
Mia stared at her.
"You're acting really weird.
You have to tell me what's been happening. All of it," Asha said. She lowered the seat to the toilet and sat, cradling her belly.
"I love you and I'll forgive you, but the most important thing now is that I help you. You have to tell me, what exactly has been going on? What have you been keeping from me?"
"I don't know what you're talking about."
Mia took the washcloth and began to wipe her eyes.
"I may be old, pregnant, and naive, but Mia, so help me God, I am not stupid, and I realize now that you've been lying to me."
Asha reached over and turned the water off.
"About what?"
"Don't do this."
"Do what? You have to tell me."
Asha hit the marbled tiled wall with her hand and said,
"Just stop it. I know you. I love you. Stop doing this to me, please."
The washcloth dropped into the tub and floated there, over Mia's stomach. She stared downwards.
"Okay, fine. I'm done. I don't want to feel like shit about myself anymore. What do you want to know? I'll tell you."
Asha wasn't even sure where to start.
"Have you been sneaking out at night?"
"Sometimes. Never on a school night."
"And how do you get out?"
"Through the side door in the piano room."
This was unexpected. That particular door was rarely used, and in fact had a large, heavy leather chair positioned in front of it.
"Do you have a key for that door?" Asha asked.
"No."
"So you left the house unlocked while your whole family was in here asleep? When anyone could have come in, robbed us blind, or hurt us?"
"I'm sorry."
"Have you?"
Asha closed her eyes and took a deep breath. The question she was about to ask was more meaningful than Mia could imagine.
"Have you ever taken your dad's car?"
"Only a few times, and only after I got my learner's permit. Usually someone comes to get me, and I walk down to the street."
"Those times you took it, where did you go?"
"Once I drove to the Leopold's house, and another time it was the Herzl's. I also drove to Sloan's."
"The house or the apartment?"
Asha followed up quickly.
"The apartment in town."
"Okay,"
Asha said, exhaling.
"Okay."
So Natalie had seen Phil's car outside the apartment, but it wasn't him. Now Asha just had to find out who he had dinner with in his room at the Le Meridien.
"And when you say," Asha continued, "that you drove to the Leopold's and the Herzl's, I take it that means you've been letting your friends into the houses I'm selling? For what, parties?"
"Small get-togethers only, but yes, I always cleaned up afterwards."
Asha thought about pointing out that she'd done a pretty poor job of it, considering the broken glass and used prophylactic, but she stopped herself.
"What about my bracelet? The one I thought I lost at an open house last spring and magically reappeared months later?"
"One of the boys took it. Casper or Alistair, I think. I had to fight with Sloan to get it back for me. It took forever."
"Mia,"
Asha said, one hand going to her forehead. Her expression was a mixture of disgust, disbelief, and fury.
I've done everything I can possibly think of to be the best mom to you, and you repay me in this way? Why?
I didn't want to, okay?
Mia pulled her knees in closer to her body.
We always used to hang out in Greg's basement, but his parents started being stricter last spring. It was Reed's idea to sneak into one of your houses. I knew you kept the codes in the little notebook in your purse, so that's how I got us in. Everyone thought it was so fun. I mean, except me. I didn't think they would want to keep doing it, like every other weekend. I tried to get it all stopped.
So that explained Mia rummaging around in her purse for the codes and shouting over the phone to Sloane that she didn't want to have anything to do with it anymore. Asha leaned forward towards the bath.
One last question. Did you go to the Ruiz's house last night?
Terror flashed quickly through Mia's eyes. This clearly upset her more than all the other questions combined. She folded the washcloth carefully into a blindfold. Leaning back, she placed it over her eyes.
No,
she said with finality.
But you did.
No, she said again, sounding much like she had when she was just a little girl, denying a crayon mark in the wall.
I didn't.
I know you did, and I want to know what happened in that house. Mia was paler than usual, her lips more purple than pink. She removed the washcloth blindfold from her eyes and sat up to turn the hot water back on. Asha immediately reached out and shut it off again.
What happened in that house? She demanded. There were no kids there. There was no party.
Was Mr. McGuire there? Mia didn't answer. She kept twisting the washcloth in her hands.
Jesus Christ, Mia, come on. We're not talking about kid stuff. This isn't teenagers sneaking out. We're talking about a grown man who—
Mom!
Just tell me. I have to know.
He took me there to do an intervention, okay?
What? Asha stammered. An intervention?
Yes. He wanted to talk to me about getting in trouble, to warn me about what happened to your doctor's daughter after she started drinking and going to parties and stuff like that. Basically, it was just like, cut it out, and I told him I would. He said that if I kept my promise, the whole thing would be our secret and he wouldn't tell anyone what I'd done. That's it. That's what happened. That's all. Asha shook her head in disbelief.
That's all? Oh, Mia, you have no idea. I do. I get it.
Mia hugged herself, still trembling, and Asha didn't know if the water really had gone freezing cold or if she was on the brink of a panic attack.
I'm done with all that, she managed to say through chattering teeth. I almost messed up my entire life. I won't lie to you anymore. Coach Nick taught me a lesson. Please, please, please don't tell him I told you. He might turn me into the police for trespassing, or worse.
Worse? How? What could possibly be worse?
Can you please pass me a towel? I want to get out.
What else have you done? Asha repeated loudly.
Nothing, Mia exploded. Nothing, okay? Can you just ground me or send me to boarding school or juvenile detention or anything at all except talk about this anymore? Can't we please just forget it ever happened?
I will never forget this. Any of this, Asha said, heaving herself to her feet and throwing a towel toward the tub.
When your dad gets home from his business trip tonight, we're going to all sit down and figure out how long you're going to be grounded and what other restrictions are necessary. I'm incredibly disappointed, Mia. You have no idea. I feel like I don't even know you.
Asha slammed the bathroom door behind her when she left. 5 minutes later, Asha was on the phone with Brooke.
Mia said it was an intervention. She said he taught her a lesson. Those are her words. That's what she thinks. That he wanted to warn her about what had happened to this girl, Jill Ruiz, who died in a car accident.
That is completely messed up, Brooke responded. It's inappropriate beyond belief, no matter what sort of trouble the girls might have been getting into.
I'm so pissed off, I can't think straight.
Take deep breaths.
My pulse is pounding in my ears.
I'm sure it is, Brooke said.
What should I do?
He's training Sloane right now. I think we should go to the school and confront him. Tell him that we know what he did and that we think it's unacceptable and possibly a crime. I'll meet you at the school.
Are you leaving now?
I'm out the door.
I'll meet you there,
Asha said, grabbing her keys and checking to make sure her stun gun was still in the zippered compartment of her purse. 31.
It was starting to snow when Natalie pulled into the parking lot at the rear of the sports pavilion. Nick's truck was there, but that was it. Maybe he was alone. The tie, which she was planning to confront him with, was wadded up in a ball inside the right pocket of her coat. Natalie closed her eyes for a second. Her first stop after the open house had been Jay's, where she'd downed two beers, swiped a Vicodin, and ranted at length to her brother that Nick had been cheating on her with a rich, older doctor all along. Jay had said, "I really wish you'd just punch that guy right in the face for me. I hate him." She'd left an hour later to go straight to the school. The mixture of the uppers and the downers had her in a fog. Angry, then sleepy. Agitated, then calm. Sad, thinking she should just go home. Go home and paint something crazy. Go home to her warm bed. It was the tattoo that convinced her to stay. "Self-love," she said, giving herself a pep talk while looking in the rearview mirror. "Your words matter. Say what you need to say. He should have had enough respect for you to at least tell you the truth." Eventually, she got out of her car. She slipped and collapsed sideways onto the ground. It took a long time to get to her feet. After brushing the snow off her face and out of her hair, she managed to walk the rest of the way to the back door without falling again. The door was propped open. Natalie stood at the bottom of the stairs leading up to the mezzanine and listened. Music was playing, and there was a murmur of voices. Nick's, she was sure, and a female. Conversational but loud, trying to hear one another over the music. The clanging of weights. The girl yelled, "Come on, dude, you can do better than that. That was weak." Sloane, flirting. Sure, Sloane could talk to Nick like that. She could talk to anyone any way she wanted. Everything was spinning. Natalie slumped against the wall. She grabbed onto the railing with both hands and fell to a sitting position on the bottom step. The beige bricks were undulating like a curtain blowing in the breeze. She closed her eyes. "Just for a second," she told herself. "I'll just rest for a second, and then I'll go home. I'll drive very slowly, taking only surface streets, and I'll go into my nice, safe apartment and get into bed and forget him forever." Above, where the staircase opened onto the mezzanine, she could hear Sloane's laughter. Nick was singing along to the music as if he hadn't a care in the world, as if he hadn't recently been in a relationship that mattered and was fulfilling and special, and that he'd ended by simply stepping away and going on with his life. The last thing Natalie could recall before waking up later in her car was thinking how much she hated them both.